selling smoothies is what I do. But for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. He's a small business owner, too, so he knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, welcome to Bet the Edge. I'm Jay Croucher here with Drew Dinsick, recording late Monday afternoon. We're going to do our AMA today, and then we'll get into some of Tuesday's game twos in the NBA. But Drew, how's it going, mate?
Oh, it's going great, man. This is going to be one of the more fun weeks of the entire year. NBA playoffs first round, where we have like two, three games a night, is just, this is such a fun opportunity to really watch the best of the NBA. If you're a casual fan, you know, this is the time to tune in. And if you're hardcore like us, this is nothing better than just going from meaningful, high stakes, high leverage game to game to game, all with the kind of backdrop of the NFL draft looming on Thursday. So this is going to be one of the most fun sports betting weeks of the spring, I would say.
Yep. Also some puck going on.
Of course, NHL obviously.
Someone on the Winnipeg Jets. 7-6 over the Avs wasn't great for my health, but got the results in the end. All right, let's jump into these questions. First one from our friend Andy Vate. Can you share your thoughts on the Jontay Porter situation? Tip of the iceberg. Jay, what kind of policies do books use if they find out after bets have settled that they were improperly impacted? I'm sure there were some unknowing people who had over-under bets on Porter that day. Yeah, maybe not so many, but before I give my thoughts, Drew, do you have any overarching thoughts on Jontay?
Yeah, I'll try to keep these pretty tight because, again, I've never worked for a book. I'm more interested in your opinion here, but I would say that, number one, this, if you take a giant step back, should be an example of the process working correctly. They flagged irregular betting. They talked to the league about it. They, process seems to have worked correctly. And then, you know, number two, I think, the idea of, you know, how do you deal with clients who are betting relatively large stakes, and losing a lot, when they are associated with, other $100 million athletes, like the brother of Michael Porter Jr. or the translator for Shohei Ohtani, right? Like the people who are around, you know, people with $100 million, like, yeah, it's not great that they're being potentially targeted, as far as kind of high value customers and players. And I would hope that, we get fewer examples of just like kind of broad wanton fraud, and I would hope that in general there's not some, you know, kind of gray line where, oh, you're, you know, because here's my general thought: if I was running a book, the most valuable like potential customer in the world is someone who is in their 20s, a male who is competitive and, you know, cares about sports and happens to have $100 million. Like, that's who you want as a customer. And that's a lot of professional athletes, and kind of, you know, getting those customers into your, you know, into your customer base, but then turning around and making sure that they're not doing anything, you know, untoward is a very, very tricky fine line. And you're taking, you know, taking losing bets and, you know, and having just a general giant red number on a given, you know, given customer, and then turning around and, well, now this one, actually this particular bet negatively impacts us, and it, you know, threatens the integrity of the game. Now we have to flag it. Like there's going to be some weird, stories like this that continue to happen, is my guess. And I think ultimately, you know, this should be held up as a good example of the process working. I hope that that's actually what's happening. I don't have enough information to say surely that it was, But I would also hope that, the reactions people have of, oh, I knew this was going, oh, fixed game conspiracy, this fueling conspiracy theories makes me want to scream, because it is absolutely ridiculous that, you go through any type of trying to maintain integrity for your sport by uncovering and shining light on misdeeds. That shouldn't penalize you in perception, but it surely feels like it is, which is ridiculous. But that's where it went with steroids in baseball, steroids in cycling, and now we're going to have to deal with this with betting across all sports, because I'm sure this is by far and away not the last time we're going to hear something like this.
Yeah, I have three quick thoughts on this. One, just in terms of from the book side, how it works. When I was at PointsBet, the trading team had to have. You would have to submit reports to US Integrity, and you would get alerts from US Integrity about, and it's like it's pretty minor stuff. Like it's a pretty delicate scale where the little thing can tip it off, where, an NFL preseason total would move 3 points, and get an alert from US Integrity being like, can you verify this? I'm like, yeah, it's an NFL preseason total. Like these things move around a fair bit. There's nothing untoward here, but for Nicaraguan soccer, maybe a little bit more. Have to delve deeper into that one, but it is fairly stringent, probably more so than I anticipated when I came to the US, where there is a fair bit of collaboration between books. I'm not talking about collaboration in the sense that people are worried about now in terms of revealing, sharp client identities and stuff between books, but just in terms of activity on a given event where, books, heads of trading or whatever, they can collaborate through US Integrity to be like, we have seen this suspicious activity on X game. Have you seen the same? And then if there is enough meat on the bone there, then there'll be more of an investigation. In terms of actual investigations and actual integrity breaches, they're basically non-existent in my time. Like this is fairly unique, at least in terms of what's been discovered and what's in the legal market. So there is definitely a system in place, and I agree that this is proof somewhat of the legal system working. Secondly, I would say that you just think of the incentive structure at bookmakers. Like books don't want to pay out big bets if they don't have to. So they're incentivized. If there is an integrity breach, they're incentivized just to not pay out $1 million on Jonte Porter. They want an excuse to be able to keep the money. And so I do think it'd be interesting, because if there's seven or eight of these, then at some point the incentive structure might flip where it becomes about self-preservation. But I don't think we're nearly at that point yet in terms of for the industry. So books are incentivized to reveal these things and keep the money that otherwise would be paid out for an integrity breach. And then the third thing, what I've seen floated around a lot, is that, this is atrocious risk management to be accepting a bet for this amount. And yeah, I get that to an extent, but also don't think maybe the average person realizes that there are certain accounts for a book that are just ultra important to the book, where I don't think people realize what a small percentage of clients contribute to an overall book's handle and projected profit. And there are clients who, this is going to be the same across every book, where there are clients where the head of trading is going to be talking to the CEO daily about the client because they're that important and the limits are so high on that client's account. And I don't know what the nature of the account was that Jonte was betting through or betting in collaboration with, but some accounts, just whatever the market, are just going to have massive limits because of the nature of the bettor and what they seemingly have behind them. So, that's just what I've seen a lot on Twitter, being like, how does anyone bet this much on props? It's like, it's not uniform. It's like everyone has the same limits. Some people are able to bet significant amounts of money on very niche things because of their projected loss as a client, basically, and just being able to weather that storm as a trading team and as a book, and just believing that the client, even if it's niche, they're still betting into margin, and there's no reason why it should be wrong. And if it is an integrity breach, then you'd have to pay it out anyway.
Yeah, that's very fair. I think if this is one of, maybe the NBA just got lucky here, and I think that's fair. Right. Like this happened to be a smaller, not a known name. And it happened to be somebody that already had you know, kind of was careful eyes on the accounts and the activities around them. And, you know, so they caught it pretty readily. And I think that's probably, that was lucky. Maybe it sends the right message to everybody who is on kind of the fringes and would get involved in something like this. And, you know, that does help protect the integrity of the sport, and that's all good. But I definitely kind of do think there is sort of a class of player and athlete who, you know, if you get too heavily in debt, or, you know, you're betting too much, and, you know, and, or you develop a problem, you know, gambling habit, then, you know, I would be more worried about if they're not on legal books and they are, you know, betting with an illegal bookie. And then you have situations where people are putting pressure on players to do certain things. And, I think that's probably eyes wide open where you need to be a little bit more careful as this next kind of generation of athletes comes up through, you know, the time period where you can bet on FanDuel as soon as you're of legal age, right? You know, like, you know, there's going to have to be a little bit, you know, a lot more education on the part of the sports, making sure their players are, you know, staying out of the wrong side of the censure.
Yep, absolutely. All right, question from Danny Dimes. What are each of your favorite draft props at odds still widely available? Drew, what do you got?
Okay, well, just for full transparency, we are recording this at 4:20 p.m. Eastern time on Monday. So by the time you are listening to this, I don't know that we can guarantee this, because information is starting to finally trickle into these markets. You do have some pretty decent limits available on things. And I guess the two that I have sort of staked the most aggressively in the last 48 hours or so, one of them is a bridge jumper, which is to say a price that is in the heavily juiced space. And but I think should be even more heavily juiced. So wide receivers over under was 6.5. It was in the -250 range. I realistically think it should be more like -1,000 to -2,000. Like, I'm really struggling to find seven wide receivers that and seven landing spots. And all of the momentum lately is sort of the 4 through 7 guys are all kind of getting pushed down because of medicals, because of just in general kind of opinions of teams and some of the interview process. So not seeing a likelihood that we see seven wide receivers go. And so I've got a ton of skin now and under 6.5 there. I would probably stop betting it in the 400 range. If you're listening and you're seeing those types of prices, it's probably a skip. But I think 250 and to 400 is a bettable number. And then a decent amount of steam on to the good for offensive linemen. A player like JC Latham is starting to rise. There seems to be very real likelihood that the Chargers are considering him as a round one play, which could mean he goes fifth. It could mean he goes 11th if they ultimately swap with the Vikings. And then I think the other two that I've heard a lot of very positive buzz on are Graham Barton. His total is in the 21.5 range, and it seems like his landing spot is likely going to be no later than the Pittsburgh Steelers, who picked 20th, and you have teams that could trade ahead of them. And then lastly, Jordan Morgan sounds very much like a sought-after tackle, higher grades than some of the other guys who are expected to go at the end of round one. And I think he'll ultimately be a round one pick, and you can get under 32.5 for a decent price as well. So offensive linemen are moving up, wide receivers are moving down. Just in general, I think we're starting to get a clearer picture of how the top 10 is going to shake out.
Okay. That all makes sense to me. The one I would throw out, piggybacking what our friend Connor Rogers said last week, who's pretty plugged in, Quinyon Mitchell to be the first corner drafted in the -140 range. He's still priced almost neck and neck with Terry and Arnold. And I will back Connor in on that Quinyon Mitchell is should be a bigger favorite than that. He's also, I believe, 18-1 to be the first defensive player drafted, which, again, I don't think is a market with a ton of clarity. And if someone like Connor tells me that is too big, then I will back him in off of that. So Quinyon Mitchell would be my play. All right, question from Steve at NYFBallGiants42. Any tennis or NFL futures worth betting now as opposed to later on?
This is mostly right now time value of money when it comes to NFL futures. I personally think that, the current state of, for me personally, and the fact that we have just had the Bitcoin halving and that there is going to be a supply shock in the next 6 months, I don't want a ton of my bankroll tied up on an NFL future that's going to be realized, if at all, in February of 2025. So I have barely even been looking at the NFL futures markets outside the draft, which will get resolved in like 4 days. So that's kind of my general thought on NFL futures and futures broadly. Now, tennis is a little different because we do have upcoming tournaments that are going to get resolved this summer. And in particular, the French Open, which starts at the end of May and runs through early June, is a huge, huge betting experience for me over the balance of the calendar. So I look at those futures pretty regularly, looking for opportunities, and we'll get into that a little bit more here upcoming in the next segment. But ultimately, I don't mind at all getting involved in futures, either French Open or Wimbledon. If you have Wimbledon options, that's probably where more of the misprices are right now. Just because people are playing on clay and we're getting a better idea of ultimately who's going to be in form for the French Open. And so those numbers are starting to get a little bit sharper, whereas Wimbledon's numbers, you look at those and there are a handful that you're just like, what? Okay, fine. Good luck with that. And I think that's kind of going to be a fun place to attack once we get past the draft.
Yep. I would throw out, and again, like, I don't think there is a ton of meat on the bone at this point that warrants, I mean, look, Super Bowl outrights and stuff, that's fine. And there's some liquidity there. But I will say, like, if you're blasting into Offensive Player of the Year on April 23, it's not great for your account longevity. And unless it is a massive rort, I would advise, just for account preservation, if nothing else, to not do that. But the one thing I will say, and I say this every year, every single season, in my opinion, for their respective MVP awards, Nikola Jokic, Connor McDavid, and Patrick Mahomes are all too long in the market. They should all be priced shorter than they are. And I understand that, you know, McDavid's not going to win this year. He's not even going to finish top two, but Jokic is going to win. And Mahomes won the 2 years ago, as well as Jokic, and McDavid's won 2 out of 3 years. I just don't think that the market consistently has these guys nearly as short as they should be. And like Patrick Mahomes, it's like 7-1. Are you kidding me? Like, you're telling me Patrick Mahomes is less than a 13% chance in his prime of winning MVP? Like, I just can't have it. He's more than a 13% chance. So if you're looking to throw for a parlay leg on another future, then I think Mahomes MVP, where it is eligible, he just can't be 7-1. I just cannot have it.
Let me ask you this relatively. Mahomes 7-1 or CJ Stroud 6-1? I kind of almost fell out of my chair flipping this price open. What? CJ Stroud is the favorite of the MVP market?
CJ Stroud had some Luka Doncic MVP type of stench to him where it feels like he's just going to be, I mean, look, maybe Stroud will warrant it at some point, but for now, I don't think that he should be priced the same way as Patrick Mahomes. Need to see a little bit more. CJ Stroud did get shut out by the New York Jets and got outdueled by Zach Wilson like 4 games ago in his career or something. So I think we need to see a little bit more out of Stroud before we anoint him as the MVP favorite. But yeah, he could certainly win, but don't think he is a 6-1 shot, certainly. All right. Question from LP Predicts. We have 2 questions here on the French Open. First one, rank the top 5 contenders for Roland Garros currently on the men's side. And then you can handle this in conjunction. Question from Desert Bro. Thoughts on French Open winners? How about Rude and Rybakina after their wins over the weekend?
Ooh. Let's start with Rude and the men and talk about this, because he is in the top 5 for me right now. He has shown a consistent level in 2024 that was far superior to what we saw from him in 2023, much closer to kind of the peak that, you know, his peak of his ratings was the French Open run that ultimately ended in a humiliating loss to Rafael Nadal 2 years ago. I think he's very much in the mix here, at least in my, you know, kind of stratification. He's at the end of the top 5. The top 4 are pretty still kind of clearly ensconced, and in any order you want to go. I don't mind between Alcaraz and Djokovic right now as the best 2. I have Sinner a narrow 3rd after the top 2, and then Nadal 4th before Rude 5th. And ultimately, the kind of the pluses and minuses for these various players are almost entirely health related, which is speculative. What we've seen so far on clay, is Djokovic looking like a little disinterested? I think and again, like, this is now narrative speculative stuff, but I think Djokovic very much, very, very keyed in to win Wimbledon this year, take back that title. And you know, that will be a successful 2024 campaign for him. If he wins Roland Garros along the way, because everybody's hurt or just plays poorly or capitulates against him, then so be it. But I don't think that this is necessarily a tournament, and clay in general, I don't think really, has kind of inspired him to give his best, but we will see. Alcaraz has been injured. He has an elbow injury. That is a massive red flag, because you absolutely need to be able to get, some spin on your, forehand in particular with your elbow, to succeed at Roland Garros. And that is a huge kind of question mark for him. And Rafa Nadal he played one very impressive match and then just a complete letdown against Alex Demonauer. And honestly, it wasn't even just the way he lost to Demonauer. It was actually visually, the eye test, like speed of his forehand, the effectiveness of his kill shots, the top spin that he was generating, all of it was way, way down from when we saw anywhere close to peak Nadal. So he, to me, is a pretty decent red flag in terms of being able to win seven matches at Roland Garros, which leaves us with Jannik Sinner. And if there are questions about motivation for Djokovic and there are questions about health for Alcaraz and Nadal, and Ruud is in a clear tier at the end of the top five, then why not consider more strongly Mr. Jannik Sinner? He is the best player on the men's tennis circuit right now, in my opinion. And I think ultimately, if you made me take one play at this moment in the French Open pool, I would grab some Jannik Sinner. And I think now is probably the time you want to do it too, because it's very, and I wouldn't say very likely, but the likelihood of him being in the mix at Madrid is good. These are conditions that fall into his wheelhouse in terms of his strengths on clay. And I think a title in Madrid will shorten his odds pretty appreciably. So not a bad time to speculate a little bit on a Sinner backing up his Australian Open win with a win on clay. That said, +330, which is the price I'm currently looking at, isn't enough for me to really kind of get a full stake down in terms of interest. I'll probably just take a flyer on him and see what happens with that price, and see how the health of Nadal and Alcaraz shake out between now and when the tournament begins.
Yeah, Casper Ruud kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you remember Albert Costa, turn of the century. He was in that range around Gustavo Kuerten and Juan Carlos Ferrero, Guillermo Coria, just before Nadal, whereas Costa wasn't as good as these guys, but he happened to sneak one French Open because he caught a little bit too early Juan Carlos Ferrero, who kind of just bottled it, I think, in his first Grand Slam final. It feels like Casper Ruud's probably going to need the draw to really break favorably for him to do it. I just don't know, with the backhand like that, which just kind of doesn't offer a great deal. The forehand's very good, but yeah, Ruud certainly a tier below, kind of feels destined to consistently lose in quarterfinals and maybe semifinals when it goes well for him. But keeps putting himself in position. He's already made two Grand Slam finals, which is probably the over for what you would have expected, but does seem a little bit like a tier below. All right, question from Yestertweets. Why is Iga longer for Madrid than for the French Open? My three ideas: tries harder in a major, conditions suit better at the French, or less hold in Madrid since it's closer. Thanks.
Yes. So there are two key factors for pricing Madrid relative to relative to every other red clay spring European tournament. Madrid is at elevation, and Madrid, the actual clay itself and the way that they prepare the surface is faster. Okay. And because of the elevation, the service, your particular strengths in terms of service and how difficult it is to return your serve favor a player like Sabalenka, like Rybakina, like a player who can generate enormous amount of power off of serve. Iga does not fall into that camp. And so for those reasons, you have to take a slight downgrade. And the court speed itself and the ability for, kind of the classic strengths of a clay player start to wane in Madrid relative to the likes of, your Stuttgart's last week, or your Rome next week, right? Or 2 weeks from now. So it's kind of in its category by itself in terms of court speed for clay, and with the elevation on top of that, really leaning into the strength of the servers makes a player like Iga have to take a decent discount in terms of win probability at this tournament. And you look at the history of the winners here, and it kind of bears that out. You look at Iga's performances here over the years, and that definitely bears that out. There were years where she was just unbeatable and came into this particular tournament and was just okay. And so I think ultimately, you know, she's definitely kind of in a, you know, much closer to the pack here than she would be on another surface. And in fact, I kind of don't think, I think her price in the plus 140 range right now for Madrid is poison. I think she should be, I think realistically you should have a clear tier of three with Iga, Rybakina, and Sabalenka right now, and then a gap before the Cocos and the Danielle Collinses of the world. So yeah, a little bit surprised there's as much market support for Iga here, especially considering what we just saw from her in Stuttgart, which was pretty unimpressive. So a little nervous about her ultimately being able to come through at the French Open, if we're being honest. I know she is still minus odds to win that tournament, and I agree with that. But I think we're starting to get more and more data and more information that just tells us that, yes, she's not the, you know, she's not an unbeatable player on clay. She's just a very good player on clay who, you know, can run hot to where she, you know, she should be priced accordingly. But yeah, we're not really seeing it from her right now, which is a little weird and a little concerning. And I think in particular, Rybakina, who beat her heads up in Stuttgart yesterday, is probably the player to watch here, because, you know, of what we've seen of every player you've seen play tennis on the women's tour so far in the year 2024, Rybakina has had the highest level. And granted, it happened in Brisbane before we even got to the Australian Open, and she's had some absolute no-shows since then that have made me very angry, because I seem to be on her when she no-shows and against her when she's playing at her top level. But Rybakina so far has been the best player on the women's side in 2024 by a narrow margin over Sabalenka and Iga.
Just cost me a lot of money over the journey, Elena, Rybakina, between taking down Ons at Wimbledon and then whatever she did at the Australian Open this year when I was on her. Did get her last year, though, with Sabalenka taking her down in the final in Melbourne. Quick one before we move on. Never looked into this, but what are Danielle Collins' prospects on clay? Because she's had amazing flashes, but I would just, having not really looked into it, I would think that her game lends itself terribly to clay, given that she tries to blast winners every single shot.
Yeah, no, she's perfectly capable of carrying the best of her game onto clay. We saw it in Charleston. She hit a level in Miami that I didn't know. I don't think anyone really knew that she had that level before she showed it in Miami. And she carried that into Charleston. And you think, well, you know, congratulations, you just got your career defining win. Like, good luck backing that up. Well, she did. She did it in spades. And it was impressive to watch. And I think, honestly, like, she's a former semifinalist at Roland Garros. I think her first breakthrough came at Roland Garros, if I'm not mistaken, maybe she's just been a quarterfinalist here, but I don't have an especially difficult time rating her on clay at all. I think she's definitely should be considered right now in the top five. And if you want to put her in the top four and flip her over Goff, I'm not stopping anyone from doing that, because Goff, just again, she hasn't shown it to us this year, at least to this point. Right now I have them effectively about tied in terms of rating on clay, with you know, a decent kind of gap between Rybakina and Sabalenka down to Goff and Collins. So yeah, like, the entire middle class and the players who usually do step up on clay haven't really shown up this year. So why not Collins for you know, a possible semifinalist at Roland Garros? I don't think it's crazy at all.
Okay. Danielle Collins, terrifying person to bet on or against, given that she can win or lose any given match. All right, the NFL draft kicks off Thursday, and we have you covered with our mock drafts, positional rankings, player interviews, and news updates around the league. Go to nbcsports.com/NFL draft today for insight leading into round one, and check back throughout the draft for analysis of every pick.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
selling smoothies is what I do. But for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. He's a small business owner, too, so he knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, couple of quick non-sports questions before we jump into game twos in the NBA. Question from at Tommy B. What's your favorite vineyard in Sonoma? Jason, inverted commas, the Rulo Croucher. Very good, Tom. Glad to see things are busy at work. My favorite vineyard in Sonoma is, I believe it's called Chateau Saint-Jean, which is a very fancy affair, very picturesque views of the rolling hills, and the wine's not too bad either, Drew. But I know this is more your neck of the woods in California. Do you have a favorite just winery, full stop?
We have a very long-standing tradition on day one flying into the Santa Rosa Airport, which is a lovely little airport. And honestly, like, if you can just get right to wine country and not have to deal with the traffic leaving the bay, you've already got yourself a winning trip. After flying into Santa Rosa Airport, we head to a place called Iron Horse. Iron Horse makes sparkling, which is my wife and her sister. That's their go-to jam. They love a good dry sparkling wine, and Iron Horse makes some spectacular ones. They're probably best known for, like, you can find them at the grocery store for the wedding cuvee, which is kind of in like the $30, $35 price point range. But they make some top tier stuff that will go toe to toe with the best of the French, as far as I can tell you. And it's a good place to kind of see the best of sparkling in California. And then I'm particularly into Pinots right now, and Iron Horse makes some outstanding Pinots as well. Russian River Valley, kind of characteristics, just in general, some pretty outstanding bouquets and flavor profiles across their best of their Pinot group. But really the key of going there first is it just has a great view, right? It's like up on a hill. It's very casual. All the people that work there and serve there are just phenomenally nice. It's just perfect view out back over to Santa Elena Mountain, across the Russian River Valley. It's kind of the best place to kick off our trip. So if you are going to Sonoma, highly recommend a stop at Iron Horse.
Yep. There is no grape better than the view, Drew, as they say. All right. Question from Travis. Love the book, film, wine talk. Thank you, Travis. How about music? What are songs you go to frequently and why do they hit differently for you?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
Best new album of 2024 so far for me has been the Vampire Weekend album. Oof, man. That thing cooks. It is good. On first listen, there are some parts where you're like, is this music? Is this noise? And why would they a lot of it is kind of best of classics, sort of going back to the first two albums in terms of sound profile. You're like, I think I've heard this song before. It reminds me of something from them, them in 2006. But the more you listen to it, the more you can kind of get into it. And honestly, like now when I listen to put that one on, it's a couple weeks old now. I'm just like, man, I wish this was twice as long. It's too short. They need more. That's been my most enjoyable listen so far in 2024. For the most part, my relationship with music, though, I just like the more electronic and trance stuff just to have on in the background so that I can kind of focus on work because the too heavy vocals or too specific vocals tends to be distracting to me. So that said, I'm ears wide open for all new and good recommendations recently.
Yeah, indeed. I will say that when I kind of transitioned in a way to having a wife and having three kids, some things had to be scaled back, and music was definitely the biggest sufferer. Sports largely stayed at the same level, but everything else had to suffer because of that. Film and television suffered, but music definitely suffered the most for whatever reason. I will say that my favorite stretch of music ever are the last three songs on Abbey Road. Golden Slumbers carry that weight in the end. That is, I think that is the best, well, to my ears, that's the best music. My favorite album of all time is OK Computer by Radiohead. Yeah. And Radiohead are the only band that I would say that I am very deep in the weeds on, where I know the words to every single song. I know every single thing about Radiohead. Everything else has fallen a little bit by the wayside. But when they're already starting to get a kind of a sniff of the kids getting older, where my six-year-old daughter is very much as like a person now, and has like friends, and kind of does his own thing and does her own thing. But the one-year-old, like, we're still 5 years away from that, but what I can see that coming around the corner, and when that happens, I'll try get a bit more into music again. But for now, it's on the back burner compared to my family and Serie A and the Dallas Stars making a run in the NHL playoffs.
Well, if you're looking for kind of new stuff that's sort of in this vein, and really like the stuff that defines my musical taste in general, like number one most listened to artist for me is Krungabin. This is like psychedelic, like it's actually kind of Beatles-esque in a lot of ways, but not a lot of vocals, more just kind of moody psychedelic rock vibe. And then your mates from Australia, Tame Impala, they have the third and fourth album really kind of gained them most of their fan base. But you go back and listen to the first two, particularly the first album, that thing you can listen to, you can put that on any day, any week for me, and I'll listen to that one wire to wire without stopping. It's a great listen. So those are probably more, that's like more my background and epitome of music interest.
Okay, no, I like it. I'll say that I think probably the most played artist on my Spotify over the past couple years would be Aphex Twin, just with having that on in the background constantly. A lot of Avril 14, more of that kind of pace than the really, really kind of deep, scary electronica, but big Aphex Twin fan. All right, also a big IndyCar fan. Next stop on the IndyCar series is Barber Motorsports Park in Alabama. Drew, the green flag waves at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
I know how to run a hair salon, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com. TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right. Quickly before we close out NBA Tuesday game twos, let's hit these. The Minnesota Timberwolves, market steaming against them a little bit. They were 3.5-point favorites, now 2.5-point favorites. The total is 212.5. Do you have any bet on this game?
I make this one three. And I make it 215. So I'm probably going to have some over action here. It's been a long, it's been a hot run for unders. and actually, some of the unders over the weekend didn't even come close. So it is a little spooky right now playing into an over. But I think there were some key takeaways from the game one that are going to be tough in terms of defensive fixes for the Suns. So they almost kind of have to tack into something that I think is a little bit higher pace, get a little bit more out of their transition, because if they get bogged down in the half court, the defensive answers for the Timberwolves were so effective that I think that it's going to be tough for them to be competitive here. So slightly in Timberwolves at 2.5. I think it should be 3, but bigger edge for me on the over, and really just counting on the Suns having to adjust into a higher pace attack if they want to stay in this one.
Yeah, I do think this is the series that in theory should see the most kind of pronounced swings, just because of the weird collections of elite talent on both sides, which I know we spoke a little bit about yesterday. But yeah, there has to be a way for Vogel and the Suns to leverage Karl Anthony Towns guarding Kevin Durant. Like, that shouldn't be able to. I mean, it works supremely well in game one, but there should be ways to really exploit that, and interested to see how it happens and in what form. I think this series will have a few more twists and turns. I don't know what's going to happen in this game too, but whether it's 1-1, whether it's 2-0, I wouldn't have any kind of finality in an opinion about this series until we see the games in Phoenix. All right, next game, Pacers at Bucks. Bucks -1.5. Not really zigzag at play, given that the Bucks won last game and have firmed for this one. So I guess an upgrade in rating for the Bucks, which has to largely come off just Damian Lillard's health. Yes. He looked fine. He looked very, very healthy, where it was a concern that he may not even play. The total is a monstrous 225.5 by playoff standards. Do you think the Pacers get back on track here?
I don't. I'm concerned about the Pacers in a lot of ways. I don't exactly understand what plan A or B were on Sunday really at all. And I rewatched that game thinking I was going to just see, oh, well, they just were the victims of bad shooting luck. But it looked like there were, kind of a number of moments where some of the inexperienced players who just haven't had reps in a playoff setting, just like they didn't look ready for it. And I don't know if that gets solved in, a quick turnaround like this. And I think ultimately the Dame Lillard kind of being able to carry the Bucks to a second win seems fine and fair. And you're right. A lot of he hadn't practiced a lot last week, and it was starting to get like, wait, do we need to be more concerned about this? And the answer was a resounding no after watching him play yesterday. So I think ultimately Bucks getting another win and moving a little bit closer to the next round is where this one lands. And I think until you see a more engaged Tyrese Halliburton offensively, that I'm not exactly sure what to believe in with the Pacers here. Before the series started, I was looking specifically at his ability to take advantage of some of the point of attack deficiencies that the Bucks have with their defense. And for whatever reason, it just seemed like Halliburton wasn't engaged whatsoever in that game one in a way that I thought he was going to be. And so you can kind of watch this one, I think, pretty closely to see if that's the same story, at which point, a bet on the Pacers in game three would be of interest to me. But for now, at least, this is not looking like the competitive series I expected.
No. And I think it's been perhaps not publicized as much because he hasn't been on playoff runs, but Tyrese Halliburton is an atrocious defensive player. He has no lateral quickness or strength, and he seems at times just kind of disinterested, and he doesn't get the bad rep that Trae Young and James Harden previously. James Harden's a much better defender, in my opinion, than Tyrese Halliburton, just because he's just big and you can't move him. And when he is engaged, I don't think he's a massive liability just because he's smart and has good hands. Halliburton just offers no resistance whatsoever. And he needs to be an outlier, good offensive player to actually be a star. And he hasn't been that guy really ever since the hamstring injury. Big game for Tyrese Halliburton. Again, I'd lean Bucks, but not with a great deal of confidence. Does feel like the Bucks win this and then zigzag, Pacers blow them out game three, and then we have game four for the series. Is my sense of how it may play out. Next game, before we close out, the Mavs are 2.5-point favorites at the Clippers. The total is 217.5. Market, I think, wisely isn't really buying into the Clippers' victory in game one as being ultra-predictive of how the games are going to go unfold going forward. I mean, it's a massive win for the Clippers, but I think it's a massive win just because they're now up 1-0 in the series as opposed to what it portends for the rest of the series. I am not, I know there is a thought that like the Mavericks, you know, they're starting Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington and Derek Jones Jr. and these guys aren't that good. And this is the team that had a 43.5 win total before the season. And I understand they made some trades, but it's not like they added any superstars. And maybe this team isn't that good. Not buying it. This team, for the last 31 games of the season, before they sat everyone and got blown out by the Pistons and Thunder, where they had nothing to play for, they had over 31 games. It is a fair sample. They had a +9 net rating. They were the second best team in the NBA behind Boston. I just think that this team, I think they have too much talent on both ends to just show up like they did again and bring across game one to game two. They may lose, the shots may not fall, but I think they will come out and play better. Ultimately, I think they will win this game. I think they will still win this series, but it's a more coin flippy than I was hoping for going into game one, but I've not lost faith in the Mavs yet.
Okay. Well, what you were describing sounded like me yesterday, saying PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. Why did I believe in these guys? There's so many minutes that it felt like you needed that, you know, you needed something more. And it was a tough hang. I'm not betting this game. I am underwater on Maverick series by a decent amount. So I just need them to show up and really just call the good plays, please, Jason Kidd. And yeah, I mean, you know, that the Clippers will have to integrate Kawhi Leonard back into their kind of rotation at some point this series, and expecting him to be anywhere close to 100%, I think, is a, you know, kind of a fool's errand. So maybe like my current strategy is I'm just going to hope that the Mavericks can make this competitive. And then when Kawhi comes back, hope that the market overreacts to his return. And get more Mavericks at that point, if we are seeing what you're saying, which is that, yes, these guys are the team that had a net rating that was impossibly good since the trade deadline. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't given up hope at all. Like, there's still a lot of series left, but what we saw from them yesterday was very concerning. And I think ultimately the coaching was of bigger concern than I ever realized was going to actually, you know, be manifest. And I think that's kind of the important thing. I'd like to see just a good game plan and preparation from Jason Kidd and the Mavericks overall. Like, they're like, just evidence that they're prepared for this game would be a welcome sign.
I do think the Clippers do have the coaching advantage, just in terms of what we've seen from Kidd, even though he did make a run to the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago. But you would give the advantage to Ty Lue. I thought that the Clippers did a really good job of just like putting the game in the hands of Derek Jones Jr. and Dante Exum and forcing them to just do stuff off the dribble and shooting floaters and just having to make decisions and not just be able to just stand in the corner where they just weren't being guarded. And this is a weird thing to say, but the Mavs might need a bit more Tim Hardaway Jr. Just get another shooter on the floor, because I don't think he's going to get, like, this is the thing with the Clippers. Like, this Clippers offense just shouldn't be that good. Like, Harden's not at that level anymore. Paul George isn't the type of guy where Paul George would be like, all right, bring me Tim Hardaway Jr. And now we have a 120 offensive rating in the half court. Like, it's just, they're not at that level, I don't think. And if it is the same thing where, you know, Derek Jones Jr. is just in his own head, just put some more offense out there. Like, you should be able to beat the Clippers with offense. Like, the Clippers are starting Ivica Zubac, Amir Coffey, and Terrence Mann. Like, they shouldn't be able to keep up with the Mavs. They just shouldn't. And hopefully, also, like, Luka Doncic, who has been anointed as the next great thing. Like, why are his teams always in the 40s in wins? Why is he always like a 5 seed? Like, this guy comes into every season as the MVP favorite. He had one good run in the playoffs where he got to the Western Conference Finals. But like, if he loses this series where they were -175 favorites going in and there's no Kawhi Leonard and you're going up against James Harden on the other side and Paul George in his, what is he, like 32 or something? And then the other three guys in the starting lineup I mentioned, like, this will be a stain on Luka Doncic if he doesn't win this series. So you show up, Luka. You show up on Tuesday. You win this game. You win this series. If you lose to OKC, that's fine. But they should take care of business here. I think ultimately they will. But they do stupid things, so they may well lose the game.
Okay. Paul George, by the way, is going to be 34. Hopefully by the time this series is over. His birthday is May 2nd. So he's got a birthday coming up. Big 3-4 for Mr. George. Yeah, I agree with your sentiment, and hopefully that that clip will get circulated and find its way to Luka, and that'll be the bulletin board material he needs to play better basketball, because the Mavs need him to be an MVP second runner if they're going to have a chance here.
I'll say, of all the great players in the league, and I do think Luka Doncic is a great player, when it goes bad for him and his teams, like, no one has a lower floor, because he looks completely disinterested on defense. And when his offense is like it was against the Clippers in game one, where it's like, it's just a lot of step back threes, and it never looks like it's going in. I understand it's an okay shot, but he has become special when he is cooking guys in pick and roll and passing the ball and getting to the rim. And when it's all falling apart for Luka, he doesn't have the stuff that other guys can fall back onto in terms of the other aspects of his game, because he's just not a very good defensive player. But I think he will show more. Believe in Luka. I think he's a top 6-7 player in the league. And he's clearly the best player in this series. And that needs to manifest itself in Los Angeles. And I think it will. All right, we are done. Don't forget to check out NBCSports.com for more information to help you with your wagers. Thanks to those of you watching on the NBC Sports YouTube channel. If you're listening to us in podcast form, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Also a reminder to find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. From Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick, we'll see you tomorrow.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mowing Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.